Let's get on to Professor Remy Shonaya. Professor Remy Shonaya, give you a brief insight into who she is. She said, I'm going to have a frank and blunt discussion with people today, heartfelt discussion, she says, she wants to have with the country today. She's our first speaker on the Security Summit. She was born in 1955 and holds French language and linguistics degrees from the University of Ife, now the Obafemi Awolowo University, and Cornell University of the United States of America. She taught at the university for 30 years before retiring voluntarily into politics in 2010 and was COA party's candidate in the 2015 general elections. And experience she documented in a book, One Woman's Race. Remy has written other books on Nigerian and African development, A Trust to End, Reflections on Life and Leadership in Nigeria, Igniting Consciousness, Nigeria, and other riddles, Daybreak Nigeria, This Nation Must Rise. She was appointed the first ambassador scientist of the Alexander von Humboldt Foundation of Germany, a 2015 alumna of the Yale University Women for Africa Foundation Leadership Program, and the United States Department's International Visitors Leadership Program. So, she's also the founder of Support Advancement of Gender Equality Program of the National Democratic Institute and a co-chair of Political and Electoral Reforms. She continues to actively participate in Nigerian politics. She's married to Professor Babafunso Shonaya, and they have two grown children and three grandsons. A round of applause for Professor Remy Shonaya. Thank you very much. Keep clapping for Professor Remy Shonaya. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. And I'd like to appreciate the staff of Nigeria Info for inviting me to this occasion. It's a pleasure. When they said a security summit, I was like, that's not my turf. You know, I'm not a security expert or whatever. Well, so whatever you get is what you get, right? Okay. But, you know, from our perspective, this is an issue for everybody, isn't it? Security is a concern for all of us. Okay. A few days ago, there were reports in the news that the deputy governor of Anambra State, Mr. Nkem Okeke, had defected from the APC, to the APC from APGA, and had been received by President Buhari at the villa. Mr. Okeke was taken to Abuja to meet the president by the governor of Imo State, Mr. Hope Uzodinma, who told reporters after the event that the defection did not involve any monetary transactions, that rather it was a result of the lobbying that had gone on, you know, and that he said that other governors were still being lobbied, including the governor of Anambra, and that the hope was that they too would jump ship and become APC members. So this kind of lobbying apparently is part of the job of a governor. This event saddened me. I was quite sad. Not that that was the first time that we were hearing about, you know, defections and so on, but it was for me like, you know, maybe the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. How do we look at the people who have been elected to conduct our affairs? What moral and ethical standards do we hold them to? And do they themselves subscribe to? I went ahead and posted a tweet on this event on Twitter. And I said, politics is a game that men play. They play it with people's lives. They play it with our lives. So you have sitting governors and deputies defecting and so on. It's like, where is the interest of the people that they're supposed to be governing in all of this back and forth, run over here and there? And the response I got was, the people, these people are playing a game by themselves. Why am I bringing this issue of political party defections at a summit on security where the major concern is all about the abductions, the banditry, the farmer herder clashes, kidnapping for ransom, and other forms of violence which are ravaging our country and making Nigeria one of the most dangerous places in the world to be alive in at this time? Well, here's the point I wish to make today. That politics, as we all know, determines the overall quality of life or standard of living of the citizens of any country. And the ethical or moral standards to which those who exercise authority subscribe and are held accountable is directly proportional to the kind of life that we will live, that the citizens will enjoy, whether it will be peaceful and prosperous or insecure and poverty-stricken. My point really is that the greatest threat to security, to the security of a people, of a nation, are terrible leaders. Leaders that are incompetent, leaders that do not have compassion for the people. That's the point I wish to make. So, in a sense, you know, I hesitate to say it, but isn't that some kind of banditry in itself? When you have leaders who do not defend the interests of the people. Wikipedia defines banditry as a type of organized crime committed by outlaws, typically involving the threat or use of violence. A person who engages in banditry is known as a bandit, of course, and primarily commits crimes such as extortion, robbery, murder, and so on. Is organized crime. Is criminality evident in Nigerian politics, and is it organized? What's criminality? When we talk about criminality, our minds immediately go to the conjure up incidents like murder, arson, burglary, robbery, and so on. Okay, so let's take murder. How do you murder somebody? You could take a gun and shoot them, right? Or you could mix some poison in their food or drink, as we often see in movies. Or you could orchestrate a state of affairs that would eventually lead to their death. Which one are Nigerian politicians guilty of? At least the second one. Because a state of affairs has been orchestrated in our country through the neglect of health services, the dilapidated infrastructure, the roads, and so on, that eventually lead to the death of a lot of Nigerians. For the first one, in actually killing people, we don't have too much evidence on that one. Nonetheless, we keep wondering about some unsolved murder cases, don't we? Who killed Dele Giwa? Who killed Bola Ige? Funchal Williams? And recently, just about a year ago, the NSAS protests. So my point is that when you take the huge resources available to a country, capable of providing the citizens with the highest standards of living in terms of basic infrastructure like water, electricity, good roads, schools, hospitals, and so on, and you divert them, whether legally, as salaries, emoluments, and so on, you know, or illegally, as Pandora, into the private pockets of a small minority, thus bringing about unnecessary deaths on our roads, in our hospitals, how on earth could you be absolved of murder? And is this kind of situation, is it organized? Is this kind of crime organized? I think absolutely yes. The Nigerian political class has organized itself into a powerful interest group. And the primary interest is to remain in power at all costs and to have unfettered access to and control over the incredible wealth of this country. So that is why all this dancing back and forth between political parties is just a game. When push comes to shove, like they say, it's clear they are all in the same group. And it's about access to the wealth of the country. In terms of it being organized, remember when the former governor of Edo State and former chairman, erstwhile chairman of the APC said, once you join the APC, your sins are forgiven. Isn't that a kind of organized situation? All right. So they are well organized, and it's all about effectively sharing the national cake among themselves. Now let me take one more phrase from that definition of banditry that I just gave. The one that says that they practice things like extortion is something I'm particularly sensitive to. When some years ago, the government decided to change the plate, the vehicle plate numbers. And then we heard that we were required to pay. Well, when I went to have some papers for the vehicle, for our car renewed in Oshogbo, I was told, now you have to change your, you have to get the new plate number. And it would be at the cost of 25,000 naira. I said, not on your life. I'm not taking it. If you are going to come and imprison me, then go ahead and do so. One, we did not ask for new plate numbers. Secondly, how could you not be paying? You were not paying at least 25,000 minimum wage. Is it not extortion when a government demands payment for services that are not commensurate in any way with the wages that the people are earning? It also strikes me, you go around Lagos at times, and you see a sign and it says, no parking here. Fine, 50,000 naira. Whoever says that kind of thing?
How could you say a fine for a traffic offense would be 50,000 naira? In a state where the minimum wage is how much? You know, so this is government by extortion. People don't, you don't just do things like that. All right, so I'm trying to now, going to try and link this up with security. How this all fits into security. My point is that the recklessness and the impunity with which political leaders commit crimes cannot but lead to a pervasive state of insecurity. The greatest threat to our security is this reckless leadership that practices impunity, no respect for the rule of law, and so on and so forth. I don't need to go into all the details about how much has been stolen from Nigeria. Chatham House was quoted in a report in 2019 in the Economist magazine that about $582 billion had been stolen from Nigeria since independence. We know how much has been wasted on contracts that would not be carried out at all, on energy or in the energy sector. That one is said, you know, to run into trillions, the power sector, some 11 trillion naira. I mean, how do you begin to think of this and to imagine what our reality would be had all these resources been used for us? So the point is that evildoers, another point, people who want to do wrong, they get emboldened in an environment where the leadership itself is practicing impunity and so on. And there's a point here that I would like to mention, you know, because part of this impunity and what helps insecurity to grow is when those who are committing, who are doing wrong, are not punished. They are not apprehended. You know, and I wondered about the herdsmen that have wreaked a lot of havoc on Nigerians, burning entire villages and farms, killing thousands of people. You know, could they be thinking, for instance, the president is one of us. He's not going to allow us, you know, for the law to catch up with us. So I think that one of the biggest challenges facing President Buhari today is to convince us, really, that he's not partial to the Fulani. Because why has it been practically impossible to arrest and prosecute just one of them? Because when the president assumed office and declared, "I belong to everybody and I belong to nobody," we were all wild with excitement. But now, what we thought we were going to have is not what we're having. So I think that maybe we misunderstood, you know, what was meant by that statement. So, but I think maybe the president will give us some explanation later. So what I would like to say to rest that part of my case is that society takes its cue from its leaders. Society takes its cue from its leaders for good or for ill. And often when you have people who are prone towards evil, then they will escalate it. And that's probably why we are in the situation that we are in now. But the topic I was given also said, how about solutions? So I'd like to quickly go to that now. When nations find themselves at a crossroads or in a critical moment in their history, as we find ourselves today in Nigeria, what do they do to give themselves like a shot in the arm, so to speak, and to turn around their circumstances? My answer usually is that they must find a way to inspire themselves. And there are several avenues through which that can be done. For example, you could look around you and observe what others are doing. Places where things seem to be getting better. You could ask yourself, how are they doing it? How have they managed to dig themselves out of a hole? Especially if in such places, you know, their situation was comparable to your own. So in that regard, Nigeria has been, you know, told to look east, look at the Asian tigers, compare yourself to the Malaysians and, you know, Singaporeans and so on, and see what they have done. Another source of inspiration could be that the leaders would take the general populace along to seize the opportunity of some important global or national events and realities and try to tease out some lessons for themselves. Okay, so my thinking is this. There are some things happening around us. Let us inspire ourselves. What's happening in Rwanda? What's happening in Senegal? What's happening in Ghana? Let's not even go as far as Malaysia. How are they turning their situations around? Let us inspire ourselves. Secondly, what are some things happening globally that we Nigerians could also inspire ourselves from, some events? And I'd like to say that there are some things, there's something that has happened, and it is that there are three Nigerians that are occupying very important positions on the global stage. Dr. Akinwumi Adesina, as the president of the African Development Bank, Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala as the Director General of the WTO, and Mrs. Amina Mohammed as the Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations. These people, by the way, have been calling our leaders' attention to important issues relating to instituting good governance in our country. But the point I'm making is this. We are witnessing a Nigeria moment in the world. Without thinking of all the other Nigerians being appointed into various positions, maybe in the American government, in Britain, and so on. It would be a great pity if we allowed this moment to pass unused. How do we use it? When Kamala Harris was chosen by Joe Biden as his running mate, and both were subsequently elected as the United States of America's president and vice president, there were repercussions in Jamaica. Why? Because Kamala Harris, the first woman to be elected as vice president in the U.S., is of Jamaican origin. Her Jamaican father had gone to study in America, where he met her mother of Indian origin. One writer put the reaction of the Jamaican people to her election in this way, and I quote, "The Jamaican society said to itself, yes, if we can have such a high-profile woman in a major country in the world, why should we not give women a chance at home? What then followed in Jamaica's politics is what has been described as a women surge, with a historic number of women getting elected to the Jamaican Parliament in the September 2020 election, increasing the percentage of women from 17% in 2016 to 29% in the current Parliament. So the question is, what inspiration is Nigeria ready to draw from having an Adesina, an Okonjo-Iweala, and a Mohammed currently on the global stage? Are we going to just let it go like that? So let's draw our conclusion now from Greg Mills' hugely successful book, which is Why Africa is Poor, a 2010 publication. The first sentence in the introduction of that book states, "The main reason why Africa's people are poor is because their leaders have made this choice." That is a serious indictment. He goes on to say that given the state of things globally, this should have been Africa's time. A similar sentiment is echoed in chapter 1 of my book, A Trust to Earn, Reflections on Life and Leadership in Nigeria. Also a 2010 publication, by the way. The second paragraph of that chapter, titled, What Time Is It in the World?, begins with this statement, "My own desire, as the turn of the century approached, was summed up in a prayer I kept repeating that the 21st century would be Africa's, that we would finally have our own day in the sun." Is it too late for us? I don't believe so. How I wish that by some miraculous intervention, the current leaders of our country would suddenly undergo a radical transformation in their thinking and come to the realization that a great door of opportunity is open before them to make Nigeria finally live up to the promise of her long-recognized potential. And it's not going to be difficult. As Greg Mills said, it is primarily about making a choice for the promotion of the common good rather than a continuation of this narrow-minded, self-seeking pursuit of personal interests. If that doesn't happen, however, let me say that 2023 opens before us a huge door of opportunity as Nigerians. What kind of leaders are we going to choose for ourselves? Again, it's all about making a choice. Will we continue to choose as our leaders members of this corrupt political class and thus further tighten the noose around our own necks with our own hands? Or are we going to take our civic duty more seriously this time around and ensure that we elect people of integrity and sound moral character who, by their speech and the example of their personal lives, will inspire us all to greatness and ensure prosperity for all? So help us God. Thank you very much for your attention. By the way, I wanted to let you know that Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala was my classmate in secondary school.
A round of applause again for Professor Remi Shonaya.